Okay, so we are holding actually here. We're holding rather. We're holding on page Mem Gimel in Sota or Sadik Vav. Finishing off with the story of the Brachas of Klolis on how Grizim and how Abel. So you have, again, in the Psukim, you have 11 specific things that are mentioned, 11 specific Averis that a person might do, for each of which there's an Orur, there's a curse, and we talked about yesterday that for each one, even though the Pasuk doesn't say so explicitly, each one was phrased first as a Bracha, blessed is the person who doesn't do this. And then we talked about yesterday that at least according to some opinions, we said that there was more detail in that. There was an Orur and a Baruch for each one, Lumer de Lamed, Lishmer Velasis, for each one that a person needs to learn this mitzvah, teach it, observe it, and do it. Why specifically those 11 mitzvahs? And then you have one at the end, a general statement, Orur Asher Lo Yokim, a person who doesn't uphold the Torah. So this is basically, like Rashi says, on the Pasuk, the Jewish people are accepting the Torah on themselves with a Shavur. Why these specific 11? So the Gemara says, Dorash Rabbi Yehuda ben Achmeni, Meturgmane de Rabshim ben Lakish. Rabbi Yehuda ben Achmeni, who was the Meturgman of Rabshim ben Lakish. As we know, the Rosh Yeshiva in those times when they're saying a drasha to the wider public, they wouldn't be able to say it loud enough and clearly enough for everybody to hear. So they would say it quietly and briefly, and then they would have a meturgamon whose job is to explain it louder and clearer to everybody else. So here, usually the meturgamon just does that. He's basically just like a human microphone. Here, sometimes we have, they themselves were distinguished talmid chacham of their own, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Achmeni was one of them. Anyway, he gave the following drasha. The whole parasha, which Rashi explains, this whole section with all these brachas and klolas, is all only about a noyef and a noyefes, a couple of a man and a woman who are mizana, where a woman is a married woman who is mizana with somebody who is not her husband. Shanema, he's going to go through and show how all of these things have to do with that. The reason why he says that, you have to say that, because let's look at the first one of them. Order ha'isha she'yasa pesel ma'secha tayavas Hashem begem, a curse is a person who will make an image, a carved image, or a molten image, which is disgusting to Hashem, etc. So now I have to ask, why are we saying order? The ovid pesel ma'secha, the order of sagile, if a person makes an avodah zarah, is an order, is a curse enough for him? He's koifa be'ikar, he's denying a fundamental concept of Yiddishkeit. How could he say that a curse is enough for him? And Marsha explains, in other words, that, first of all, he's chayiv skila, but I'm okay. You could say by a bunch of the other ones that I'll mention over there also, they're chayiv various mitzvahs based in. And the fact is, if we're talking about a noyef and neyefes, as he's going to daushin over here, it's also mitzvahs based in. It's chenet. The question is that though that order implies only an olam hazeh, whereas a person who worships of a disorder has lost his place in olam haba as well. Unless he does tshuva, of course, as opposed to if he's mizana with an eishes ish, he gets executed in this world, or if the Beis Din doesn't do that, then Hashem will deal with him, but he gets a place in Olam Haba after all. So the point is, if we're going to say that it means in the simple sense then that a person is worshipping Avodah Zarah, how can we say that order, that a curse is enough? It should be something much more serious than that. So what we're talking about is that a man was mizana with a woman who's also to him, for example, an eishes ish, and they had a child, and this child is a mamzer, and this mamzer is embarrassed. He doesn't want to be, he's also, after all, to intermarry into the regular body of the Jewish people, so it's hard for him to get married. So he goes to live among the goyim, and he ends up worshipping Avodah Zarah. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem says, Arurim Ovev V'Imer Shalzeh, Shekach Gomeloi. In that case, the father and mother that caused this, besides the fact that they're in trouble and they're high in Mrs. Basin and so forth, but in addition, a curse on them that they caused there to be born a child who ends up assimilating and ends up worshipping Avodah Zarah like that. So Rashi explains then, fine, so that explains the first one. So Rashi goes through all of them systematically and explains, we can all explain all of them in the same vein. So Rashi goes through. You have among those 11, there are a number of them that are arrives. After that one, you have the next one after that is Or, the next one after that is Or Masid Bura Ehu, but then, it's finished, right? Don't worry about it. Thank you. Okay. So you have, so let's go through them. And Rashi goes through them not in order, because Rashi goes through them by the theme. But let's go through them in order. After that one, the next one, Makla Ovar V'Imoy, a person who shames or curses his father or his mother. So therefore, he's going to cause that now, because of they raised such a child, so now everybody is going to make fun of and cause embarrassment to his parents for causing such a thing. Oru Masig Gvura'eu, a person takes over somebody else's boundary. This guy literally did that, taking over somebody else's wife and then being Mizana with her. Mashke Iver Badorech, he causes a blind person to stumble on the road, meaning also like Lifne Iver, to convincing a person to do it, to do an Avera. So she doesn't realize maybe, especially in those times when women, even nowadays, women learn less Torah than men do, and in those times even less. So she may not know the severity of the Savera, where he does, and he's misleading her into it. And yeah. Then you have a Mata Mishpat Ger Yosem Ba'almona. The next one is a person who judges unfairly a Ger, a Yosem, or an Almona. Now Rashi says, I can't understand. What does that have to do with the case of an Eish HaSish? So Rashi says at the end, Eini Yodei L'Doshei. Tosfos Shantz explains like this. Let's consider. This boy was saying he's embarrassed because of his lineage, and therefore he goes to a different place. So here we were saying he might go and live among the Goyim and assimilate with them and worship Avodah Zarah. But another way of looking at it is maybe not. Maybe he does end up in a Jewish community somewhere, but then they're not going to know. In effect, basically, he has no father and no mother because he left them and is trying to hide his past. So he's tantamount to it. So he's a ger. He's a stranger in a strange place. He's tantamount to a yosim because, in effect, he has no parents. And his mother, meanwhile, is also to her husband because, after all, she was mizana willingly and therefore she's also to her husband. So therefore, she's in effect like an amana. So the Tosfos Shantz says that one fits as well. Next, it actually goes on, then you have a few that involve various kinds of arayas, a father's wife, a behemoth. They have a father's wife, okay, so first of all you can say the Eish HaSish that we're talking about over here is not only Osir because she's a married woman, but also, for example, because it's his father's wife. The next one is... point is, in other words, that we're saying that all of them can be related to this idea. They can commit znus, and the result is the child is a mamzer, doubly so, number one, because she was an Eish HaSish, and number two, because she's his father's wife. Then you have, the next one is
you
having...
You fit that with, like, almost any mitzvah. Maybe,
well,
maybe like, for example, like, one of them, for example, kills someone, so you could say that with any mitzvah.
Okay, but Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nachmani is explaining that these specific mitzvahs all relate to this idea. Wait, we'll explain and we'll talk in a second what Maharsha has to say on the subject. But meanwhile, first, continuing Rashi, then you have, the next one is Shoichim Kol Behema, having relations with an animal. Okay, she's acting like an animal, acting like we learned earlier in the Masechta, about the Sotas, Korban, for example, is animal food for that reason. With his sister, with his mother, law, same thing. They can be married women as well, or even if not, the fact is the child from them will be a mamzer as well. The next one, Maki Re'ehu Basoser, where he strikes somebody in secret, meaning that, what does he do? He's mizana with this woman. The result is now she becomes a sota, and she winds up drinking the mei sota and exploding. So he's caused in secret that now she dies. The next one is Lekeach Shoichad. The next one is a person takes a bribe to cause somebody to be killed. So here you have an example. Rashi says, if you have somebody who helps a manaif be able to find an Eish HaSish and then indirectly causes her death, like we're saying. Interestingly, this was in today's Daf HaYomi and Shavuos as well. The Gemara had brought a drosha, how we know that such a person is also to do. We know, of course, it's also to commit znus oneself. How do we know? It's also to be a procurer and to make women available for that purpose, because we learn from, since it says lois sinaf, we can also learn lois saniv. So an interesting thing that they don't cause niyuf. So it's interesting that here we have it dovetails exactly with what Rashi mentions over here. Okay, so all of them fit the thing. With all of that said, though, Rashi says, and with all that said, though, Marsha says, some of these things are a little bit of a doichot, maybe, like you said, because there are other Avedas that could go in that category, and just because the one of Avedas Zara, you're going to say an order is not enough. So therefore, Marsha says, you know what? Very simple. Each one of the, almost every one of these 11 is actually in a little parasha of its own, meaning there's a struma break before and after it, with the exception of two of them. There's two of them that are back to back without a break between them, but other than that, at least that's how the Rambam has it in Yad HaChazaka, two of them in the middle, I don't remember which ones, but the Rambam has a psucha and a struma before and after every one of them, except for two of them that don't have that between, this is based on the safer Torah that he copied from. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, the one about Pesel Masecha is in a mini parasha of its own, because it's got a stuma before and a stuma after it. Therefore, Marashah says what Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachmani may mean, not the entire parasha as in all of the 11 orus. That specific one, we're not just talking about a person who makes an Avodah Zarah and worships it, rather we're talking about a person who has relations with an Eishes Ish, and as he said, causes that there's going to be a son who worships Avodah Zarah, etc. But not necessarily to the other ones. Daf have to do with that. The other ones can just be taken as they are. There is, by the way, I mean, there are other points Mephoshim should make as well about why the Torah picked and why Hashem picked Davka these. For example, the Abai Benel on the Pesukim over there has an interesting explanation. First of all, Rashi mentions they correspond to the 12 Shvatim. Rashi explains there's one for each Shevet with the exception of Shevet Shimon, since in the end, in Vezos HaBaracha, Moshe didn't give a separate Baracha to Shevet Shimon because of what they had done in Shittim, where with Benos Minyan, therefore Hashem didn't want to have an Oru for them either. But each one corresponds to one of the Shvatim, so the Abai Benel actually goes into some detail over there and explains how each one of these corresponds to something that a person from a different Shevet, from one or another Shevet throughout Jewish history did. I don't remember all the examples that he gives. I think, for example, the first one about the Pesel Masecha, I think he says refers to Shevet Ephraim with Yeravam and Nevat and his Egle HaZahav and so forth. I know he mentions, for example, Makar Ehu Basoser. He mentions the connection with Shevet Zvulun because he learns that one of the kings of Yisrael who assassinated his predecessor, he learns was from Shevet Zvulun, and he goes through like that, through all of them, and finds a connection between each one of them and one of the Shvatim.
So there's only a few of the forbidden marriages. There's 23. Why specifically those few?
Well, so again, according to, we could say, according to Rashi, we're picking those. Well, so there is the idea, I think the Maharal says, or somebody says, that the idea is because these are much more easily available to a person. A person's mother-in-law, for example, back then, when married couples often lived with the wife's parents for a while, so therefore a man and his mother-in-law might be more easily available. His sister, his father's wife, etc., they all live under the same roof, so it's much easier for such things to happen rather than more distant relatives who don't necessarily live under the same roof. So that would be a reason why to single these out. Okay, fine. New topic now. The Perek had begun by saying that there are certain things that Nemorin B'choloshen, there are certain things that can be said in any language, and then there are things that have to be said specifically in Loshon HaKodesh. So we mentioned that the parasha, that we mentioned that the beswearing of the Sota can be done in any language, which is the connection of it to Masechta Sota, and then it mentioned a bunch of other things, davening and Kriyashma, a variety of other things that can be said B'choloshen, and then it started talking about things that have to be done Davka B'loshon HaKodesh, one of them being the Brachos of Klolos on HaGrizim and HaRevel, which is why we got into this whole discussion about it and kept on digressing from it over the last couple of blocks. So now the Mishnah goes on to say another thing that has to specifically be said in Loshon HaKodesh is Birkas Kohanim. So now, therefore, the Gemara now spends a couple of dafim talking about all about Birkas Kohanim. This is the main place in Shas where it talks about it, other than you have there's scattered references in other places, but this is the main place where all the halachas, where most of the halachas of it are collected. So the Gemara starts going through the various dinim of Birkas Kohanim, the various things. It has to be standing, it has to be in the Beis Hamikdash with the Shem HaMeforash, it has to be ponim al ponim, and so on and so forth. So now, eventually getting into, the Gemara brings a bunch of brises, one after the other, that discuss various, that we learn from the Pesukim, different details about how Birkas Kohanim has to be done. So one of them, the Gemara says, Tanya Idach, we learn in another braisa, when the pasuk says "Kol Sevorchos Bnei Yisrael," this is how you should bless Bnei Yisrael. Means "B'Shem HaMeforash," means you have to use the Shem HaMeforash. Now, after Omer B'Shem HaMeforash, well, you're saying that it means the Shem HaMeforash. Oy Eina Ella B'Kinui, maybe it means that you can use a kinui. So what are we new now? The word kinui, when it comes to names of Hashem, has a couple of meanings. Usually a kinui in connection with the name of Hashem means, so to speak, like a nickname or a descriptive term about Hashem. For example, Chanun, Rachum, other phrases like that, where the post can talk about, for example, names of Hashem in other languages, such as God in English, would be considered a kinui as well. So first Tosfos brings actually from an explanation that's what we mean. The Braisa is asking, how do we know? Adapt has to be using the name Yud Kei Vav Kei. Maybe instead you could use the name of Elikim or Shakai or some other name of Tzrokos or some other name of Hashem. But Tosfos says, why would we think that? The Pasuk in Parshas Nosse, when it says about Birkas Kohanim, says, Yivarachacha Hashem v'yishmeracha, Yer Hashem ponaveilacha, etc. What would make us think that you could say instead Yivarachacha Elikim or Yivarachacha Tzrokos or whatever? No, Tosfos says what it means is that The word kinui over here means, that means using Aleph, means using Adnai instead of Yud Kei Vav Kei. So you would think that you should do that.
The way we say it.
The way we say it. So, note, Talmud Lama was Somor Shmi. Therefore, the Pasuk finishes off. They should place my name. And my name means Shmi HaMiyuchadli, my name which is unique to me. Every other name of Hashem also has, or can also be used to refer to other things as well. Elikim also means Malachim and judges, and it can be used Lahavdil of Getchkes. Kale, Tzvokos, etc., all of them have other meanings. Yudke Vovke is the only one that uniquely refers to Hashem, Hayahoyv of Yir. So therefore it's called Shem HaMiyuchad, the Shmi HaMiyuchad Lid. So Adnai, that's the thing. So Adnai, when we pronounce it with a comet, is used exclusively of Hashem, but after all, does mean basically my masters. So therefore, so it can, to that extent, be used of other things as well. So, Yochel Afik Vulin Kain. Now, you would think the same thing would apply outside the Bismikdash, that the Kohenim have to dafka use the Shema Mefurdish, Yudke Vavke. No, Nemakan, the Somor Shmi, because here the Pasuk says they should place my name. The Nemalahalam, Losum was Shmi Shum. Then you have, when the Pasuk describes about the places where the Bismikdash is going to be built, so he uses the expression that Hashem says to place my name there. Malahalan, Beis HaBechira, just like those psukim are referring to the Beis HaBechira, the Beis HaMikdash, Afkan, the Beis HaBechira, the same way, when does the Somor Shmi apply, that they use Yudke Vavke only in the Beis HaMikdash and nowhere else. Everywhere else, they use Adnai. Rabbi Yoshi Yoma Enet Sarech. Rabbi Yoshi says, I don't even need to learn it that way. There's a better way of learning it. Harehu Omer, the Pasuk says, right after the Aseret Dibros, in Parshas Yisrael, B'chol Mokem Asher Azkir Shmi, Hashem says, in every place where I mention my name, Ovoye Lecha, I will come to you, and the Pasuk continues, Veirach Ticha, and I will bless you. Now you have to ask, what do you mean, B'chol Mokem Sakadat? What do you mean, in every place? You can't use the name Yudke Vovke in every place. We know, Rashi refers to a Gemara in Pesachim, that when Hashem first introduces this name to Moshe, now Hashem used this name with the Ovis as well, but as Rashi points out in Parshas Va'era, they didn't experience the full import of it, because the name Havaya represents also that Hashem keeps his promises, and he didn't keep his promises fully to the Ovis. So now, in Parshas Shmos, when Hashem is telling Moshe, Ekya Asher Ekya, and he says, Zeh Shmi La'olam, Zeh Zichri La'dor, from this we learn, that there's a Shmi and there's Zichri, there's Hashem's name, and then there's the way Hashem's name is meant to be mentioned. And they're not the same. So from that we learn that you can't say the name Yudke Vovke just anywhere. So why would we even think that, how could the Pasuk be saying, B'chol ha-mokam ha-sha'azki ha-shmi, as though anywhere in the world you can say the Shem Havaya, it doesn't work. Elam mikra zeh mesurasu. We have to say, therefore, that the Pasuk is, the words in the Pasuk are out of order, and it means, B'chol mokam asher ovei lecha ovei rachticha, in every place that I will come to you and bless you, meaning in every place where the Mishkan or the Beis Mikdash is going to be located, in the Midbar, in Shiloh, the Beis Mikdash, then, as Kiras Shemi, in those places, I will allow my name to be mentioned. V'heichan ovei lecha ovei rachticha, so, continues Rabbi Yoshia, where is that place, the ultimate place where Hashem is going to come to us and bless us? B'beis HaBechira, in the Beis Mikdash. Well then, Shom Azkiras Shmi, B'beis HaBechira, only there then in the Beis Mikdash can the Shem HaMeforash be used, and therefore we're saying that when the Kohenim are going to say Birkos Kohenim, and we're saying it has to be B'Shem HaMeforash, that will be limited only to the Beis Mikdash. So all the other, the Gemara mentions six things that are essential for Birkas Kohenim. It has to be Ponim Oponim, it has to be Bam Midah, etc. It has to be Belashim Kodesh. Five out of the six of them apply everywhere. This one of Shem HaMeforash applies only in the Beis Mikdash. So nowhere else, everywhere else they use the Shem Adnai. Tosfos, in fact, points out, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, that after Shimon HaTzadik passed away, the Kohenim stopped using the Shem HaMeforash in Dirkas Kohenim. Now, why is that, if we're saying they can do it in the Beis Mikdash? Because then we depend on the Beis Mikdash, it depends on the Gilui Shekhinah. After Shimon HaTzadik passed away, there was a tremendous decline, and therefore, so now there wasn't such an open Gilui Shekhinah in the Beis Mikdash as there was before, and therefore the Kohenim of that time decided we can no longer use Hashem's name, the name Yudke Vovke, even in the Beis Mikdash. So that's that. So now the Gemara gets into some more gadda on the subject of Birkas Kohenim. Omer Rabbi Shua ben Levi, minayin shakodesh baruch hu mis'ava leBirkas Kohenim. How do we know that Hashem desires Birkas Kohenim? Hashem, it's more than just, in other words, the mitzvah that Hashem gave us. Hashem wants us to do it in order that He should have the ability to give us a bracha. So, Shenema, the pasuk says, "V'samu shmiyah b'nei Yisrael, they shall place my name on b'nei Yisrael, v'ani avorchem, and I will bless them." So there's different girsos in Rashi over here. The one girsa, the older girsa in Rashi, is that Hashem is saying that the speech depends on Hashem, so to speak. In order for Hashem to be able to place his name on his people, then there has to be the birkas koyanim. So in other words, not so much for our sake, it's so to speak for his sake, he needs it. And according to that, the idea is, you know, you have the idea that the Gemara has an expression in Pesachim, for example, Rabbi Akiva says to Rabbi Shimon, Yosef Masha Ego Roitzen Linak, a Pora Roitzel Lahonik. Even more than the calf, the baby wants to be able to nurse to get milk, even more than that, the mother wants to give milk. So Kaviyachol, therefore Hashem, even more than we want a bracha from Hashem, Hashem, who is the source of all good, wants to be able to give us a bracha, and the way to do that, the conduit for that, is Birkas Koyanim. The other girsa in Rashi is that Hashem makes the speech depend on them, that they have to speak in order for Hashem to place his name on his people. So that's one meaning of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mis'avel Birkas Koyanim. Marsha says another point about it as well is like this. The Gemara discusses Rashi mentions in a moment, based on a Gemara in Chulin, there's a machloikas in the Gemara in Chulin between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. When the pasuk says Vani Avorchein, who is it referring to? Hashem says, I will bless them. Who's the them? The rest of the Yisraelim or the Koyanim? So you have Rabbi Akiva explains that the Koyanim give a bracha to the Jewish people. Now is that only from the Koyanim? How do we know they're getting a bracha from Hashem? Is because it says Vani Avorachim. So the Koyanim are giving the bracha, and Hashem, so to speak, agrees with them. As opposed to Rabbi Shmuel says, no, the Jewish people get the bracha from the Koyanim. The Koyanim are the ones who get the bracha from Hashem. The Gemara mentions over there in Cholim, Rabbi Shmuel Kahana Messiah Kahani. Rabbi Shmuel, who himself was a Kohen, he wants to help out the Kohenim, and therefore he wants to arrange that, he wants to understand the Pesukim, that the Kohenim themselves get a direct bracha from Hashem. So therefore, Samar Shor explains that this our Gemara over here, Rabbi Shulman Levi, is going according to this as well. He holds like Rabbi Akiva, that Vani Avorchem, the Koyanim bless us Yisraelim, and Hashem agrees, so if Hashem is blessing us anyway, why do the Koyanim have to be the go-between? Let Hashem just bless us directly. The reason is Hashem desires the Birkas Koyanim, Hashem wants us to be blessed by the Koyanim as well, and that's another meaning of Mis'avel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mis'avel, the Birkas Koyanim. So there's different other points about it as well, including Ian Yaakov points out, since the next thing is by Hebrew Kalo Smosha Lahakam as a Mishkan, Hashem desired very much that there should be a Mishkan where we can connect with Hashem on a bodily level. So the same way we see that Hashem really wants that there should be a bracha through the Koyanim to us. There's many places in Chassidus also where it talks about the idea that Birkas Koyanim, more than any other bracha, is Ad Mehera Yoruz Devorei, the words and the bracha that come true right away, unlike other brachas that can be stuck in the Olam HaSoyonim, and so on and so forth. And the idea is because the Koyanim are the conduit of Chesed. The Koyanim is Isha Chesed, and therefore it comes down more directly through them. Rabbi Shur ben Levi also says, Kuminayin shekol, or kol koyin, shemavorech misborech. How do we know that any koyin who gives a bracha to the Jewish people himself gets a bracha? V'she'ein mevorech ein misborech. But if he doesn't give a bracha, he himself does not get a bracha. Shenema, because Hashem tells Avraham, v'avorecha b'vorechecha, I will bless those who bless you. So therefore, if the koyinim bless us, then they themselves get a bracha. But if not, then not. Rashi says over here that this would, again, this follows Rabbi Akiva's opinion that the Koyanim bench us and Hashem agrees with them. So Rashi says the reason why Rabbi Shur ben Levi needs a separate pasuk Avorchem Avorachecha, why can't he learn it from Vani Avorchem? Because Vani Avorchem means, like Rabbi Akiva explains, how Birkas Koyanim works. So therefore, to know that the Koyan himself gets a bracha only when he blesses us, for that you need Avorchem Avorachecha. In that Gemara in Cholin, actually, Tosfos brings from Medrash that applies to Goyim as well. Those Goyim who bless us themselves get a bracha. And it brings over there from a medrash, where one time a goy comes and gives a bracha to one of the chachamim, and he says, I don't even need to give you a bracha back of my own. Hashem has already blessed you because you blessed me a yid. Yeah. Va'amar Rabbi Shur ben Levi, and further Rabbi Shur ben Levi says in this connection, as far as the importance of giving a bracha and receiving a bracha, Is ein noisin kosher bracha levarach elo l'toiv ayin. You, when you give the kosher bracha to bench, by benching you give it only to a toiv ayin, only to somebody who has a good eye. So Rashi explains that means somebody who's not looking for monetary gain at other people's expenses, and he does gmulas chasadim with his money. Such a person is an appropriate person to be giving to be benching on the kosher and to be leading benching. As the pasuk says, "Toiv ayin hu yivoyrach," the one with the good eye shall be blessed. Ki nosan milachme ladol, because he gave of his bread to the poor people. So al tikri yivoyrach ele yivoyrach, not just yivoyrach, he will be blessed, but yivoyrach, he's the appropriate one to bless. So, in particular, Marshall points out, you know, you have, the Gemara mentions in brachas, you can find in some Siddurim and Ventures, you can find, you have a specific bracha for the Balabayas in benching. In most Nuschos, you don't have it, although we do. We say, Arachmon, Yvorachas, Ovimori, Balabayas, Azebes, Imimorosi, Balabayas, Azeb. So there is sort of implicitly a bracha for the Balabayas as well, but anyway, the point is, so who is appropriate for him to be leading that bracha is the one who himself is Toiv Ayin. Marsha says this is a connection with Birkas Kohenim as well. The Kohenim bless us ba'ava, as they say in the bracha, the Vorech Sam Yisrael ba'ava, and therefore they can be the conduit for the bracha, and it flows through them. And the same way with the Toiv, and the same way with the Toiv Ayin. Marsha also points out, by the way, the word milach moy is very significant in this connection. Now, you can have a person, for example, where sure, he gives bread to the poor people, but he gives the lesser quality stuff. He's going to keep the good stuff for himself, and he'll give the pumpernickel bread or something to the aniyim. No, kinosan milach moy, the very same kind of bread that he himself eats, he gives to the poor person. That's the tovayin.
What happens if he eats poor bread?
If he himself eats poor bread, then that's what he gives them. But even, I'll tell you, there is actually a story where there's a story with some rebbe. I don't remember now who. I think it was the Mizrach Maggid actually, where at one time a rich person comes to him for yichidus, and the Maggid asks him, "What do you eat?" And the guy says, "I eat bread and salt like a poor person." And the Maggid tells him, "No, you got to eat good fat and meat and wine and whatever like rich people do." And they ask the Maggid afterwards why. So he says, "Listen, if this guy eats good food, then at least he'll understand that to the aniyim he has to give something lesser, but the epis something. But if he himself lives off of bread and salt and water, he's going to think to himself, so all he needs to give the poor people is like rocks." So there is that. You have to be careful not to be frum of Yanim's Cheshvan. Yeah.
What happens if someone allowed to, like, have poor food himself and save all his good food to give to the poor people?
Sure, you can do that. Sure. That would be a good thing to do, yeah. And the Maharal also makes a point over here, Bechlau, you know, there's lave toiv, like, you know, you have in Pirkei Avos, when Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, last Shabbos is Pirkei Avos, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai asks the Talmidim to figure out what's the most important midah, ezer derech toiv, ashe yidbak ba adam, and the Talmidim come up with different answers, ayin toiv, lave toiv, chover toiv, etc. So the Maharal points out, lave toiv is one thing, but ayin toiv in a way, even though Rabbi Lozman, even though in the mission over there, Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says that lave toiv really includes all of them, but in a way, the Maharal explains, ayin toiv is better even than lave toiv, because it shows in a good eye that affects the eye, after all, affects other people, the heart not so much, and therefore the Gemara is making a point over here specifically, it's the toiv ayin who's the one who's going to lead benching. By the way, this comes up in halacha as well. The Rama brings in Shulchan Aruch in the halachas of the Seder, that on Pesach night, the Balabai, even though normally the rest of the year you can honor somebody else with leading benching, on Pesach night, by the Seder, the Balabais himself should be the one to lead. Why? Because earlier, at the beginning of the Seder, he's the one who starts the announcement, Hey Lach Ma'anya, called the Chvin Yesev Yechel. So he's the Toiv Ayin tonight, therefore it's most appropriate that he should be the one leading benching.
Yeah, but everybody says it.
Everybody says it, but still the Balabais leads it. He's the one who's actually inviting the people in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Amar of Yeshua ben Levi. Then Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says another point as well, also about Toiv Ayin and the opposite. Minayin shafilo oifus shamayin makirin betzorei ayin. How do we know that even the birds of the heavens will recognize and stay away from somebody who's stingy? So they won't eat food that comes from that stingy person. Kenema, as the pasuk says, kichinam bezoira haroshes ve'enei kol ba'al konaf. It's for nothing that these net is spread out in the eyes in the vision of all of the winged creatures. So Rashi explains that earlier, this is a pasuk in Perek Aleph of Mishlei, the psukim before that I was talking about, it actually explains, I was talking about stingy people. They want to be able to grab whatever possessions and things from other people that they can. In context, really, the Pulsic actually is talking about thieves who are trying to steal and rob from people and convince other people to join them. But Rashi over here was explaining, based on the Gemara over here, that we're talking about it's more that they're stingy. So now we're saying the net, with all the grain in it, is spread out for nothing. Even the birds will stay away from it. Now, how is that? Birds don't have, Marshall points out, it's not that birds have seichel to be able to know whether the guy is stingy or not. So Marshall says two things. First of all, of course, Hashem decides what birds are going to be caught and what are not. So Hashem can make it that the stingy person puts out his net with the grain and it and so forth. Hashem will make sure that the birds stay away from it. So therefore, he won't even trap the birds that he's trying to. Second of all, Marshall says, you know, you think about it. In a way, it works with derech hateva. A person who's not so stingy, what he's going to do is when he wants to put out a trap for the birds, he's not going to first put out the trap and put the grain in it, because then they're going to instinctively stay away from it. He first puts out the grain there to get the birds used to coming to that area. Then eventually he'll put the trap, and then the hope is then they won't notice it and they'll get caught. Meanwhile, the stingy person doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to put out that grain or bread or whatever ahead of time to attract the birds to the area. So he starts by putting the net with the bait in it, and then the birds instinctively stay away. Anybody who benefits from somebody who's stingy, like either comes in and is a guest by him and eats his food or something, over belav, then he's over on a lav, not literally a lav of one of the 613 mitzvahs, but in other words, the posik is telling you don't do this. Shenema, another posik in Mishlei, al tilchamas lechem ra'oyin v'gemer, do not eat bread from the bread or the food of somebody who's a ra'ayin, who's a stingy person. So we see the Shulman is telling us don't do that. And the pasuk continues, ki kmo shor benafshei ken huvagamer, because the stingy person is like shor to himself. What does shor mean? Rashi explains, it doesn't mean shor like a gate, because then it would have two paradoxes. Shor, in general, verbs in Lashon Kodesh, past tense verbs in Lashon Zohar, are usually, it's called chetzi komets or chetzi patach. The first letter has a komets and the second one has a patach. Like ochal, holach, etc. So shor then is a verb. It means, Rashi says two possibilities. It can mean he feels bitter, as you have a word, for example, Rashi brings, you have, for example, an expression in Sefer Yirmiyah, kateinim ha-shoyaros, which means like bitter, inedible figs. So it's kmi shor benafshei, this person feels embittered within himself. Look at this. This guy is eating my food. And in other words, I had no choice but to invite him out of politeness, but still I feel bad. So therefore, Shlomo is warning you, stay away from such a person. The other possibility it actually brings from Menachem ben Soruk, the famous Baal Dikduk, that it means Meloshin Shir, Meloshin, a fixed amount. This guy is thinking to himself, there's some fixed amount, how much is this guy going to eat? And when he sees the guest eating, he's eating more than I expected. He's eating for longer than I expected, and I can't stand it. So therefore, the Shlomo is telling you don't have dealings with such a guy in the first place. And in fact, Marashah says, you look at the rest of the pasuk, is also saying, al tilchamas lechem ra'o, and it continues, va'altis of lamata moisav, don't desire his delicacies, because it's not going to be delicacies. Not only he is going to feel bad and bitter or whatever, but he's going to cause you to feel that way as well, and you're not going to wind up benefiting from it. The Gemara continues, and it's not just one lav from eating from such a person's food. It's two laven, because the Shlomo says, al tilcham va'al tisav, don't eat with him and don't desire. So therefore, so it's not just one lav, it's actually two. The Amar Rabbi Shimon Levi and... Yeah, well, we're not talking about Lisa Sava from that says the difference. We're talking about in this posik from Mishnah. Here's another point about sorei ayin, about stingy people. Ein egla arufa ba el b'shvil sorei ayin. You know what causes an egla arufa to be brought? We have the last perek of Amasech that deals with all the dinim of it in detail. You find a body outside the city and you don't know who killed them, then you have the whole ceremony of the egla arufa. So what causes it to be brought el b'shvil sorei ayin is because of stingy people. Shenema, the pasuk says that the tainim are there, they oversee the whole thing, they wash their hands, etc. And then they say, v'onu v'omru, and they speak up and they say, yodeinu l'shofchu es adam hazeh, our hands did not spill this blood, ve'einenu l'roh, and our eyes did not see. So we have to ask, why do they even need to say that? Would we have thought that the zikne based in themselves are murderers, that they have to say, we didn't spill this blood? Ella, they have to say that because they have to declare, Loi Boliadeno Franuhu Boloi Mizonis. We didn't, this guy didn't come into our attention and we let him go without food. Now, why would that cause him to die? Now, we're not talking about it, but here we find the body dead, as in, like, it seems he died from hunger. The Pasuk uses the expression that you find a cholol, which usually suggests that he was killed in a violent way. Rashi explains what might have happened, conceivably, if he was left to leave the city without food, then he might be so desperate for food, he sees somebody else walking along with food, and he goes and attacks him, and then the other guy kills him in self-defense. So therefore, so he may well have that because of a lack of food is why he ended up getting killed. So now the based in the Ziknei Ha'ir are saying that didn't happen. We didn't see the guy and let him go without food. We didn't see him in the city and let him go without an escort, where again the Gemara goes on further on in last Perek on Daf Mem Vav, and Daf Mem Vav and Zion goes into great detail about the importance of Lavoya and the consequences of not doing it. So now Rashi says, okay, not Rashi, Marsha says, okay, wait a minute, on the contrary, then the Ziknei Beis Din are saying we didn't let him go without food. So how is Rabbi Shurban Levi saying that an eglad rofeh is brought because of stingy people? Adrabah comes out from this, it's not, it's because they weren't stingy. So he explains like this, the Ziknei Beis Din are saying that we didn't know of it. So we're saying we, the Ziknei Beis Din, weren't sorei ayin. But the fact is, they do have to, after all, say, Kapil Amcha Yisrael, Hashem forgive you Jewish people, meaning, in other words, the implication is there must have been somebody in town who knew that he was here and then let him go without food and without an escort. And therefore, we're asking Hashem, please forgive that person for their negligence. So we see that other person, that perhaps unknown person, is responsible for this because he was stingy and didn't give the traveler food. The Gemara continues. Omar Rabba, getting back to the Gemara then goes and gets back to dinim of to dinim of birchas kohenim. But in between, also the Gemara also deals with birchas kohenim has to be ba'amida, has to be standing. So then the Gemara digresses a minute to talk about another point as far as proper behavior in shul. Omer Rav Bar Rav Huna, kiven shenifkach Sefer Torah, when the Sefer Torah is open for leaning, also the sapra afilu b'dvar halacha. At that point, you're not allowed to talk even in matters of halacha. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, in Nehemiah and Ezra, in Nehemiah's times, they brought a Sefer Torah, and they're leaning on Rosh Hashanah in front of the whole people, and the Pasuk says, uvafiskoi, or uchitfiskoi, really, is actually how it says in the Pasuk. When he opened the Sefer Torah, when Ezra opened the Torah, omdu, everybody omdu. Now, on the face of it, omdu means they stood. However, the Gemara's understanding, it means something else. The word omdu over here means to be quiet. Shenemar, as we find a pasuk in Eov, where after Eov's friends have spent chapters upon chapters trying to convince him, and Eov has responded back every time, and they finally all give up. So now Elihu ben Beracha Labuzi comes in, and he says, you know what, I was waiting, I didn't speak up until now, because I was waiting until they stopped speaking, ki omdu, when they stopped, when they were quiet, like on a word, they didn't say anything else, so then I realized that I need to speak up. So in other words, we see that the word omdu over there means to stop speaking. So the same way, by Ezra and Nehemiah, means uchofischai omdu kolom, all the people stopped talking. Now, on the face of it, therefore, this means actually that there's no particular source to say that you should need to stand during Kriyas HaTorah. And in fact, it is worth mahalocha. You don't have to stand during Kriya. Nonetheless, the Rama mentions that it is a good thing to do. And there are people who have the minhag to do that. I can tell you in the shul over here on Shabbos, Rabbi Elzeber Zolzayin Gezun. And keep in mind, he's already been Tishim Moshuach, and he stands every time for laning. So it's something to learn from. Yes. Anyway, yeah. So, the Gemara continues, Rav Zera, Omer Rav Chista, Mehocha, Rav Zera says in the name of Rav Chista, you have another pasuk that we can learn this from also in connection with that Kriya in Ezra and Nehemiah's times, where it says, V'ozne cholam al Sefer HaTorah, all the people's ears were focused on the Sefer Torah, meaning they're not talking about anything else. Now, Tosfos brings up a point that the Gemara in Brachos tells us that Rav Sheshis would, when they were laning in Shul, he would turn in a different direction and he would learn. He would say, Inhu bididhu, they're dealing with their thing, laning the Torah, ba'anan bididan, and we're dealing with our agenda, which is learning Torah Shabbat Peh. So how could he do that based on the Gemara over here? So Tosfos gives a few reasons, a few explanations. First of all, it might be different when he's turning into a different direction. Second of all, Tosfos says, Rav Sheshis was blind. So technically, he's Potter from Kriya Satora, because Kriya Satora has to be done from a written text, and Rav Sheshis wouldn't be able to do that. So they're Dvarim Shebichsav Yatzer Ashori LaOmer Nalpeh. You can't say Torah Shebichsav by heart. So therefore, he may have been Potter from hearing Kriya Satora, and therefore he would have a reason to be able to be learning something else meanwhile. Then Tosfos gives another explanation, which is Tosfos prefers the explanation of Rabbeinu Hananel that Rav Sheshis was an example of Torosei Umnosei. He learned Torah full time. He didn't interrupt for anything. So therefore, yes, he doesn't have to interrupt his learning of Torah Shema Peh for the sake of hearing the learning from the Torah. But the rest of us, are not Torosei Umnosei. Then we have to follow what Rava says over here, and we're not allowed to speak and learn even Bidvar Halacha while the Torah is being learned. And the poskim also talk about, actually, what about would you be able to learn silently? Would you be able to like look at a sefer and read with your eyes? It's really, the poskim mention, it's really also not the right thing to do. It's not quite the same as we're saying over here, because the fact is your ears are focused, but nevertheless, you should be fully focused on the kriya and not on anything else. Then the Gemara says another din, going back to Birkas Tainim, for Omer of Shoban Levi, called Koin Shalin Notol Yodov. If a Kohen did not wash his hands, lo yisaes kapav, then he should not duchen. Shenema, as the pasuk says, su'u yadeichem kodesh, lift up your hands in purity, uvorchu es Hashem, and bless Hashem, so they need to wash their hands. Now, the machlokas aposkim, the machlokas who showed him, does that mean, are we talking about, there's a special washing that has to be done for Birkas Kohen? I mean, you could have, for example, a person got up in the morning and washed Negelwasser, and since then, he's been careful to make sure that his hands didn't touch any covered parts of his body, or his shoes, or what have you, and therefore, technically, he doesn't have to wash. Does that mean he wouldn't have to wash for Birkas Kohen again? So the Rishonim discussed that point. Lamaisa, we have that the Kohenim wash regardless, and even on Yom Kippur, by the way, even Yom Kippur, we're negovaster in the morning. We wash only our fingertips. When it comes to Birkas Kohenim, the Kohenim wash their full hands. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, of Aleph, Chafalef 7. So we know there's the concept that nowadays the halacha is like this hillel and also lover, the halacha is going to be like this shanai. So the other talks about it in Kuntres halacha discusses this whole point about what it means that halachas will never be bottle unlike certain other parts of the Torah. So nowadays we're in the period of hayom lasoisam. We're in the time when it's still the time to be doing mitzvahs in practice. And even when we come to the first stage of Yemos Mashiach, before Trias Amesim, when at that point we're also still going to be doing mitzvahs Maisias and much more fully than we are now, because many mitzvahs that we can't do now are going to be able to be fulfilled then as well. So now, in practice, because of the way the world functions, you have to have halacha l'maisa is going to be according to one opinion, and the other one is going to be able to be fulfilled only by ruchnius. So nowadays, halacha is like the Hillel, and Beis Shammai's opinion, we don't reject Beis Shammai's opinion, but we just say in practice, we can't follow it and it exists only Beruchnius. In Yemos Mashiach, in the first stage of Yemos Mashiach, we say it'll be the other way around, the halacha will be like Beis Shammai because the world will be on a higher level. But now, that ever continues there, there'll come the time after Hayom La'asoysam, there'll come the time when L'mocher L'kabel Sforam, when it's the time in the future when it's time to receive the reward of all of Ma'asenu V'Avodaseinu, at the time of the world of Tchias HaMesim and after that. At that point, we say mitzvahs betelus lasid lavo, the mitzvahs in a sense are going to be bottle. So then, meaning of the words, and one meaning of that that Ebbe discusses in that contrast, is that it means the concept that a mitzvah is a commandment to a person is going to be bottle. There's just going to be the fact we're going to be doing mitzvahs because they're the rotzen of Hashem, not specifically because we were commanded to do them. Commanded implies we don't really want to do them, and we're just doing them because Hashem said so. Now, at that time, we'll be completely in tune with Hashem's rotzen, and therefore we'll just be doing the mitzvahs purely because they're Hashem's rotzen. Now, and then at that point is when we say the halachas of Torah will not be bottle. So now, actually, at a time like that, when the world is not limited with the physical limitations that it has now, then the halacha will be like Beis Shammai and like Beis Hillel together. Because at that point, we're going to have the rotzen of Hashem, and Hashem is nimna nimnos. Hashem transcends anything, any impossibilities, so therefore we will be able to have the halacha is like both of them, and it'll be able to be done because it'll be a whole different kind of world.
But Hashem agrees with both possibilities. And why does Hashem, and why does it say that Hashem agrees that there'll been a time over Rashi and to fill it?
So when it comes to tefillin, we're saying that Hashem is saying that it's more of an honor to Hashem to have havayas v'emtzah. But nevertheless, he's not saying that we're rejecting Rashi's opinion. Hashem is saying that in terms of which one is a greater honor to Hashem, then Rabbeinu Tam's opinion fits better with that. Very good question. Okay. Continuing with halachos of Yom Tov. Everything that we were talking about so far as doing malachos on Yom Tov is only with sodach odam. But you can't do any malachos on Yom Tov for the needs of an animal. So a pet or whatever, you can't. Lachem, the pasuk says, ulavada yosa lachem, and lachem means v'loy l'behem. So you wouldn't be able to cook anything or carry something, even into a caramelist, for an animal, as far as that's concerned, it's the same as Shabbos. Similarly, in that vein, you also can't do such things. You can't bake or cook for a goy. Now, if you have, for example, you have a living maid or something, so then you're cooking a pot of food, then you can add something extra for her. Provided the Alter Rebbe says, let's say that once you put the pot on the fire, then you can't add anything else. When you're filling up the pot to begin with, then you can add a little extra for her. And then if you have other food that you could give them, and meanwhile you could conceivably use all the food for yourself and your family, then it would be mutter, because then you have hoyo, let's say, the whole thing is roy for you. But then we'll talk more tomorrow about Sashem, about more of these details of adding food for a goy, and then Klal the Dinim about inviting a goy on Yom Tov, which are not so simple with Klal, yeah.